spotlighting National Child Abuse Prevention Month with a look at a new partnership to protect First Coast kids. That conversation's just ahead. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live on the radio and never miss a show. Catch our daily podcast on iTunes anytime. Just ahead, activists on the First Coast have formed a coalition, and they're training thousands of adults to spot the signs of child sex abuse. We'll tell you all about the Darkness to Light initiative. We want you to get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, how UF Health is making big strides against Parkinson's disease. Plus, The Spectator with all this weekend's events, all of that and more coming up this morning. But first this hour, it is the launch of a community-wide coalition to decrease childhood sexual abuse in Northeast Florida. The Darkness to Light Stewards of Children Coalition is working to train 50,000 adults in our area over the next 4 years to develop the skills to prevent, recognize, and react to signs of child sex abuse. Because today, 42 million survivors of child sexual abuse are living here in the United States. Studies say 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 5 boys will become victims before they reach the age of 18. And this creates enormous psychological damage and even fiscal damage to our economy. WJCT is partnering in this effort along with the YMCA First Coast, the Monique Burr Foundation, and the Jacksonville Children's Commission. And you know, April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, so this couldn't be a more timely discussion. Here with more, we welcome Tammy Miller, Vice President of Risk Management, YMCA Florida's First Coast. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Linda Burr is here. She's lead trainer for the Stewards of Children Child Abuse Prevention Training Sessions at the Y. Good morning.
Good morning.
We're already getting your calls. What are your questions about the Darkness to Light initiative and this effort to train tens of thousands of adults in our area to protect our kids? This is free training, by the way. So get on the line now with your calls at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect and email and tweet the show. Tammy, let's begin with you. How come the YMCA is involved in this?
Well, about a little less than 2 years ago, the Monique Burr Foundation, Stacey Pendarvis, and Children's Safe Passage, Curtis Hazel and Mike Williams, came to the Y and told us about the Darkness to Light Stewards of Children program and how it teaches adults 5 ways to protect their kids from child sexual abuse, and if we could get involved with this. And so it's such a great cause. Anything that we can do to make our community a more positive place, anything to help children. So we formed a coalition, and we are trying to get others to join our coalition so that we can reach that tipping point of training 50,000 adults in our Northeast Florida area.
And WJCT is proud to be a member of this coalition, Linda. 50,000 adults you want to train by the year 2019. That's a high bar to hit, but you think you can do it?
I believe we can, because as people learn about this, as they experience the training itself, they get excited about wanting to train more and more people. It's like a wildfire that catches on. They get excited about it, and they go out, and they spread the word, and we continue to get more and more calls requesting this training for groups of people that work with children.
And give us a call here on the show. We'll answer your questions about the Darkness to Light initiative in just a moment at 549-2937. Tammy, let's talk a little bit about the scope of this problem, just in our corner of the state.
Yeah, it is an issue, and that's one of the things with the coalition, is that the way that this works is that the 50,000 is based on 5% of the population in Northeast Florida for adults. So what we want to try to do is we want to get to that 50,000, because according to the tipping point theory, once 5% of the adult population has been trained, then it will start to become a behavioral, sort of like the everybody wears seatbelts, everybody has a car seat. So everyone will work to protect children from child sexual abuse.
It will become mainstream, right? That's the idea.
Hope.
And so how will the adults be trained? This is free training. What all goes into this training?
Well, we get organizations such as churches, daycare, different child-serving organizations that request the training. We have a sign-up. An ideal number is between 15 and 25 participants per training. And we have, we have 15 YMCA staff that are trained facilitators. We have a total of 33 trainers in the area. And so we are staffed. We are looking for more because I said it's catching on. We're getting more and more requests. So it is a two-hour training. We all get together, and what it is, it's a mix of video and facilitator-led discussion. And it's a lot of participation in the discussion. It's very, it sparks a lot of emotion in some people, but it's very well received.
And I would think, too, as well, that adults are given the tools that they might not have to recognize and spot the signs that a child is being abused and what to do about it, how to react, right?
That's correct. It does very well equip people with, in quite detailed, the ability to recognize the signs. If you work with children or if you have children, there are red flags that you can notice that are happening, such as behavioral changes. There are some physical signs, but typically it's not physical, it's behavioral changes. And so it really just tells people to pay attention, give the child the attention, and it also teaches you how to open the discussion with the child if you suspect something. How do you talk to a child about this?
Right, and we'll go to your calls in just a moment about the Darkness to Light Coalition at 549-2937. Tammy.
So the other part of that, too, is that we have a free online version of the training. So for people who do not want to go to a group training, they want to take this on their own, they can go to First Coast YMCA website and jump right on. And that, too, is free for now, free through December. And that's going to be our main point, is to try to get as many people to take the online training and to share that link, so that we can reach as many people.
Here's a quote from a recent article about this in the Miami Herald. A recent study found taxpayers spend between $12 and $16 million annually in direct prison costs for female inmates with a history of child sexual abuse. One in three girls in this country before the age of 18 will become a victim. And so often that leads to young girls being tipped into the criminal justice system because they've suffered sexual trauma. It's something that the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center is heavily involved in working to try to awaken people to these complex issues. That's an incredible amount of money. $16 million in taxpayer funds as an end result of untreated, unrecognized child sexual abuse.
Yes, and so that's why this particular training really focuses on prevention, because that's the only way we're going to change the tide with this problem. If you can prevent it, it talks about if you can prevent one sexual abuse incident, it creates a ripple, because it's true, the effects of child sexual abuse are incredibly devastating. In the training, we have the video presents different people who have experienced it. They are survivors. They take you through their story, and they talk about the effects that it had on them physically, on their families, and it really does stay with a person. The good news is that there is healing. It ends on a very positive note. There is healing, and there are things that we can do to prevent this.
And right now, we want you to share your stories, your thoughts, and your questions about the Darkness to Light Coalition. WJCT is a part of this here on the First Coast. The goal to train 50,000 adults in our area over the next 4 years to protect children. What are your questions? What are your thoughts? 549-2937 to join the conversation. Beth in Mandarin is with us. Hey, Beth.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a therapist, and many of my clients are women who were sexually abused as children. And one of the most prevalent, I would say universal issues, is that the mother was aware of the abuse and did nothing to prevent it, made a conscious choice not to get involved. And I wonder if there's any part of the training that addresses that.
Yeah, thank you, Beth.
Yes, there is actually one of the stories where a prominent lady was repeatedly abused by her own father, and she was very aware that her mother knew about it and did nothing, which is heartbreaking, really. It talks, the training does address that, and it just really talks about how, you know, if we can change the way we view child sexual abuse and bring it out into the light.
What do we need to change?
Well, really, we need to change the entire attitude as a society. I mean, back in the day, I mean, we're in a more enlightened society than we've ever been. And hiding something like this is really unthinkable in this day and age.
And so we need to change the old attitude that it's a private family matter and redefine this for what it is, a crime.
Yes, right? Absolutely. The more we talk about it, the more it will become unthinkable to hide something like this.
Tammy.
And really just bring it to the forefront of what we're looking at. And that's why it teaches the five ways to protect, because it's all about prevention and education. And perhaps if, you know, you have a family friend who says, hey, can I take your son or somebody that you don't know as well, or, you know, on a weekend trip, maybe to Disney, to think about that, to think, okay, that's probably not a good idea. How many other people are going? Try to avoid those one-on-one situations. And just to look at those mm-hmm. five ways to protect your kids. And that's what that training is all about. And that's what the coalition is about, is to try to train as many people so that we can, you know, just so that parents can just make an educated decision, say, wait, maybe that's probably not the best choice. Maybe let's think about a different way to do this.
549-2937, Paul in Orange Park. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. I was sexually abused by my mother from age 8 to age 17. My reaction was to withdraw and build up a tremendous amount of anger. My youngest brother was sexually abused by my mother for I don't know how long. And when it comes to recognizing people who might be being sexually abused or have been sexually abused, unexplained anger or unexplained withdrawal from society. My psychiatrist told me, said, what you have is PTSD. From your sexual abuse, and I'd suffered for 50 years with nightmares, and he was able to give me some medication to help with that. But, you know, most people don't realize that there are boys who get sexually abused, and I can't think of a worse situation than being sexually abused by your own mother. I appreciate you having this topic.
Yeah, Paul, I so appreciate you sharing this, and I'm so sorry. And you're right. It's not just girls, young girls, that can be victims. You know, it takes so much courage for you to call and share that. So thank you for doing that, Paul. And Linda, let's talk about that. Because here he is, a man who for decades has suffered with the after effects.
Yes. In the training, several of the stories, there are actually three of the stories that are men who have been abused. And so typically we do think of it being young girls, but we can't think that way anymore. And when it's within the family, it's very difficult. But that's where our child care workers, our teachers, nurses, doctors, those are all mandatory reporters. They need to have their eyes open. And you said, Paul, that you reacted with anger. Well, a lot of times we just dismiss a child that has behavioral problems as being a bad kid, but we can't do that. We have to look into it, spend time with the child, talk with the child. It may or may not be child sexual abuse, but either way, we just need to spend time with the child and see what's going on and see how we can help.
It's terrifying, isn't it, though, for a child to tell another adult?
It is, and there are several different ways that we can become aware of a situation where this is happening. One of them is self-disclosure. And at the point of time where a child is disclosing to an adult what is going on, it is a critical time in that child's life. And it's very important for an adult to just be very present with the child and listen. Don't prod. Don't ask too many questions. Just say, you know, is there anything else you'd like to share? And just be there for the child and don't overreact. And then tell the child that it is not their fault, that I'm here for you. We're going to protect you from here forward.
And it's 549-2937, Claudia in St. Augustine. Hi, Claudia. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. My story is a little different in regards to my daughter was sexually abused. And I happen to have been a probation and parole officer dealing with adult and adolescent sex offenders. And her telling me, based on the information I gave her, helped her tremendously. The issue that she had was she was a track star, she was a volleyball star, she was very popular, and it happened to be a church overnight youth minister that all the young ladies just were in awe of. And none of those, quote, good girls that she hung with believed her. And that was her tragedy because they disowned her, they physically assaulted her, she had to change schools. So part of the education, too, has to be that when these children come forward and they're able to tell an adult that, you know, the schools didn't protect her, you know, they have to be involved, too. The other children have to be educated on how horrible it is to be ostracized, how horrible it is to feel like you're the only person that this has ever happened to. So hopefully groups of girls can get together and support each other, be there for each other. I mean, I'm proud of my daughter. She struggled for many, many years. She ended up in the correctional system. She ended up with some mental health disorders. She has social anxiety disorder, but she's a mother of three. She's doing wonderfully. We talk all the time. She still lives in Minnesota, but it's a tragedy when their own friends don't believe them and, you know, go after them like that. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, thank you so much, Claudia. She's right. So often when a child comes forward, they're not believed. What about that?
There are so many more instances of abuse, actual abuse, than there are false reports. It's unbelievable that someone would not believe a child or at least take the steps. If a child discloses, and now I understand that situation was a little different, it was the other children, but if a child does come to you and disclose, you just have to default to believing them and then let law enforcement or another organization make that determination.
And psychologically, Tammy, as Linda said, the real incidents far outnumber the false reports, but somehow psychologically, collectively, all of us adults, why is it that so often adults are reluctant to believe the child?
I would think because they probably don't want to believe it themselves, but the thing is with when someone comes forward with a story like this, our trainings teach us at the Y that there's such a small percentage of times when a child is actually not telling the truth about this. So it's like maybe 3-5% of the time where this would be a false allegation. So people do need to really listen to children and talk to them and investigate and see what's going on.
Take it seriously.
Definitely.
549-2937. Rodney is on the west side this morning. Hey, Rodney. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa and your panel. Thank you for taking my call. This is very difficult to me, but I wanted to call in. I'm a registered sex offender. 12 years ago, I abused a boy, and I'm calling because I know that I'll never completely fathom the damage that I did. I was abused as well as a child, and I know that for some crimes you can make restitution, and for this one there's no possible way to make full restitution. But I wondered if there was a way for perspective of an offender to offer thoughts on what was going through the mind of the offender as he groomed the child towards the offense, and offer any help in that way to an organization like Darkness to Light to help understand what's going on, how, you know, I put myself in a position of trust with the child and the family, and then completely violated that trust. And I just wondered if there's any way that would be of any help.
Yeah. Rodney, thanks for calling. And I appreciate that. Of course, abuse doesn't happen in a vacuum. Most of the time, almost, I believe virtually all the time, an abuser was themselves abused as a child. It's a cycle of abuse. And Rodney, I would encourage you to contact this organization. We'll get you that number. It'll be on our website later today. What about his thoughts?
It actually is a very good point that he could be of assistance from his perspective of how he groomed a child. The training goes into the things to watch for, and one of the things is the grooming, the special gifts, the special attention, the one-on-one, the things that someone who has ill intentions tends to do to move towards a relationship. And we also need to keep in mind, this isn't always face-to-face. This also starts online. We have to be very guarded of where our children are going online and what who they're talking to.
And that'll be part of the training too, right?
Yes, it goes into that as well.
Sure. And so for people that have been listening and are curious, how can they get in touch? How can they be part of the training? Because this is a free evidence-based curriculum that adults on the First Coast can join in and be part of this.
So they can go right to firstcoastymca.org, and you'll see that there's a page devoted to Darkness to Light. The classes are there if you want to register for a class in person and have a facilitator-led class. And then also the free online training link is right there. And any organization that wants to work with us to try to advocate for this cause, to try to decrease and check child sexual abuse in our area and also protect children and educate people on the five ways to protect children, they can give me a call at the YMCA, 265-1805. We can get them a part of the coalition.
And I so thank all the callers today. It took a lot of bravery to share some of those stories. So thanks to all the callers, and thanks to Tammy Miller, VP with the YMCA, Linda Burr, the lead trainer for this, also with the Y. Again, that's firstcoastymca.org. WJCT, also a partner in the Darkness to Light initiative. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, later in the hour, we've got to look at all this weekend's events from The Spectator, and we'll tell you about the Five and Dime Theater's new production, courtesy of our own Al Letson. But up next, making strides in the fight against Parkinson's disease with UF Health Jax. That's after this.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Hi, I'm Warren Miller. Each week on Closing the Loop, we hear stories of how North Floridians are dealing with change, the recession and sluggish recovery, events in their families, their own health, and their career changes. Closing the Loop is personal, often surprising, and every week it reflects the resilience of the human spirit. Join me each Friday here on WJCT for Closing the Loop.
The Dinosaur Train is rolling into Orange Park. Thrasher Horn Center and WJCT present Jim Henson's Dinosaur Train Live, Buddy's Big Adventure, on Tuesday, May 12 at 6 p.m. See the beloved stars of the hit PBS series come to life on stage in your hometown for the first time. Join Buddy, Tiny, King, Don, and their family and friends in this fun-filled, interactive musical trip back in time. Tickets are on sale now at 904-276-6815 or thcenter.org.
Every day on Morning Edition, it's the news you can't do without.
This morning, we've been looking at what's happening.
There's conservatism, libertarianism, environmentalism, religion.
We're not props. We're just everyday people.
The crowd, the joy, the sense of hope.
Historic.
Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, encouraging news for patients with Parkinson's disease. There's a new medication on the market to treat Parkinson's, and UF Health Jacksonville is one of the few locations in our area providing this treatment. Here with more about that and the upcoming First Coast Parkinson's Run, we welcome Dr. Odunachi Ogu. She's assistant professor, UF Health Jacks, and also director of the Parkinson's and Movement Disorders Center at UF Health Jacks. Doctor, good morning.
Thank you.
Also here, John Hollinger, spouse of a Parkinson's patient, and we appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And Jennifer Otero, she's John's daughter and the run coordinator and the co-founder of the First Coast Parkinson's Run. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So we'll talk all about the run in a moment, but first, Dr. Ogu, there's a new medication on the market for Parkinson's disease, correct?
That's right. This new medication is a medication that's delivered through a pump. So it gives patient ability to have the sort of that continuous dopamine infusion and continuous control of their medications with what we call those ups and downs that patients usually have as disease progresses in Parkinson's disease. So it's been in research for the last 10 years, available in Europe for the last 10, 15 years. So we're glad to have it now in the U.S. market.
And UF Health Jacks, one of the select locations in the country, right?
Definitely.
To provide this?
Definitely.
How was UF Health able to land this?
Truly with the research, we were involved with the research for many, many years. And once it got approved, we were one of the few locations in the Jacksonville area that would be providing this pump for patients with Parkinson's disease.
And let's talk a little bit about Parkinson's, a treatable but not curable disease.
Yes. But we've come strides in the last 10 years in terms of managing patients better. Patients are living longer with Parkinson's disease as long as they're with the right medication, right regimen. And I always say to patients, it's not just the medication, it's also a lifestyle. You have to make sure you're the healthiest you can be, active, exercising as well.
John Hollinger, your late spouse had Parkinson's disease. So we appreciate you coming on the show today to talk about the effect this disease has on families.
It is a profound effect. It really kind of takes over as the disease progresses. Initially, I know in my experience, we were able to monitor and get Lorraine stabilized. And we had intervals of time where things would kind of plateau, and it would move around with a degree of normalcy. But as the disease progressed, those periods became shorter and shorter, and the effects of the disease became more pronounced.
Yeah, it becomes more difficult over time. And in recent years, Michael J. Fox, a huge celebrity, has really helped the public understand and have better awareness about the impact of this disease. He's been a huge fundraiser and advocate. Do you feel that celebrity factor has helped?
Most definitely. Everybody that I speak to or that speaks to me knows about Michael J. Fox and his situation. And most of them know something, if not a lot, about all the work that he and his foundation have been doing.
And Jennifer, you're the co-founder of the First Coast Parkinson's Run.
Yes.
There's a lot of work being done right here in our area as well.
Yes, definitely. When my mother was diagnosed, there were not the resources locally that we felt access to. And through the last 10 years, what I noticed is that you've got these large organizations. I wanted something local that helped support the local support groups and brought it where it was easily reachable for the local Parkinson's patients. And it is truly amazing how many people are actually affected by Parkinson's in Jacksonville.
We're getting calls about this at 549-2937. Joe in Jacksonville. Hi, Joe. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes. I have restless leg syndrome. And as you know, the patients with it are also Parkinson's meds. Medication helped me.
Okay, you're cutting in and out, Joe, but he talked about restless leg syndrome. Will this medication help him, doctor?
Medications are quite similar in terms of treating restless leg and Parkinson's, although it's certainly different pathophysiology in the sense that in restless leg, perhaps there's a dopamine deficit present in the spinal cord, and in Parkinson's, there's so much more. Since similar medications are used, yes, this medication will help you, but there are other medications that are available in the market right now that gives long-acting control of restless legs, and maybe that would be an initial option prior to using the pump.
But this pump, for Parkinson's patients listening right now, this pump could be of help. They need to contact you at U of Health.
Yes, definitely.
And here's a tweet from Jim. My father had Parkinson's, and he experienced loss of smell and the snowflake effect. What is the snowflake effect?
The loss of sense of smell, I would say, is something that you can have about 10, 20 years prior to the onset of Parkinson's disease. Is what we call one of the premotor manifestations of Parkinson's, along with what we call REM behavior disorders, which is sleep abnormalities, which one can find in patients with Parkinson's disease. This is what we call premotor manifestations and can be present 10, 20 years prior to the onset of Parkinson's disease.
So much to discuss here, but right off the bat, we want to get folks to mark their calendars for two big events coming up. First off, on this Saturday the 18th, there'll be a symposium on Parkinson's at the Southside Marriott. That's the first one, right?
That's correct.
And so tell us about that event.
So this was actually as a result of our last 3 years' run. We were able to raise funds to host one of the first Parkinson's symposium in the Jacksonville area. So we're having a number of keynote speakers. One will be a professor we'll be speaking on some of the advances in therapies in Parkinson's disease. We have various breakout sessions addressing several concerns in Parkinson's, from nutrition, exercise, medications, and including research in Parkinson's. And we have also another keynote speaker who is actually a patient of Parkinson's disease. His name is John Broham. He's been motivational speaker for several years since his diagnosis with Parkinson's. And just to finish that symposium with some motivation as we move forward with Parkinson's. So we have a lot of exciting things happening this Saturday.
Yeah, that's this Saturday. And then next Saturday, the 25th, Jennifer, the First Coast Parkinson's Run.
Yes, Riverside Park. The 5K will be at 9, the 1 mile fun run at 10. But we have a lot more than just the run and the walk. We have a health and wellness festival. We'll have a large Parkinson's exercise area. We have bands, we have DJs, we have food trucks. We've got Gordon Chevrolet out there, and Trauma One is actually going to be doing a flyover. So we're really excited. We believe that we'll have 500 to 750 runners out there, much less spectators. We plan to double from last year, and this is only our second year.
Wow, that's exciting, John.
It definitely is. You know, it's good to see the community, embracing a new event like this. And, of course, it's close to our heart. So it's a really nice event. I know my wife was alive last year for the first one, And she was just thrilled with all the activity and the fact that people came out and were concerned about it. It really helped her out.
Well, and this year, we're certainly going to be having a tribute to all the caregivers, all the patients who have passed away in the last year, Parkinson's disease. Again, this is a more somber occasion because we lost one of our patients who was indeed a founder of this run. So it's certainly a tribute.
It certainly is. And again, that's next Saturday in Riverside, the second annual First Coast Parkinson's Run. Come on out for that. And thanks so much, Dr. Odonachi Ogu of UF Health, Jennifer Otero and John Hollinger. Thanks for sharing this with all of us. We so appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope you have a great turnout. And we'll be back in a moment with a look at all this weekend's events. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Miguel Sanon.
I'm Nora Jones.
My name is Pedrito Martinez.
I'm Christian McBride with Jazz Night in America. Our new show is bringing you inside the jazz world. We're headed to concerts around the country, from New York to L.A. to D.C., and we're talking directly to musicians, finding out how and why they do what they do. Join me right here for Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet...
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
The Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida public radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Listen to After Hours to relax with music that spans the world in all styles from classical to doo-wop. Weeknights at 7, only on 89.9 FM.
Well, we're thrilled to announce that Jacksonville's own Five and Dime Theater is producing our own great Al Letson's play. Yay! John Coffey Refuses to Save the World. They're going to debut this tomorrow night at the Museum of Science and History in the Planetarium, we're told. Now, this is the first time this show will be fully produced, and it will be directed by WJCT's very own Michelle Simkelit. Here with more, Lee Hamby, Managing Director and Founder of the Five and Dime, and our own Al Letson. Yay! In studio. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning, hey, Melissa.
Hey, okay, so Al, let's begin with you. Tell us all about John Coffey Refuses to Save the World.
John Coffey is a character from the movie The Green Mile. And when I was younger, I saw The Green Mile and I loved it. And then I got older and watched it like a couple years ago and I was completely horrified.
Why is that?
Well, because, you know, in the movie, John Coffey has all this power. He's Michael Clark Duncan who passed away. But he's Michael Clark Duncan and he has all this power to save and heal everybody. He's a good dude. And they end up executing him in the electric chair.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, there's like, Carrie Spector just said, spoiler alert, it happens anyway.
Doesn't it go along with so many criticisms of movies like that, the so-called magic Negro effect?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Where there's this mythical black character who has mythical powers to help the white people become better people.
Right, right. It's like they, the play is about that concept, about the magical Negro and how he doesn't actually ever exist in real life.
So, Lee Hamby, you're staging this at the Planetarium at Mosh.
Yes, it's so exciting. We're utilizing all of the effects that the Planetarium has. So I won't give any spoiler alerts about that, but come and see those cool, very cool effects that you don't necessarily see every day at the Planetarium.
Yeah.
Very nice. And this is in keeping with the Five and Dimes mission of doing really edgy shows in interesting venues, right?
Yes. We love that collaboration with all these different venues in town. And we want to keep that up. So, and they've been wonderful at Mosh.
Yeah. Maria's great.
So you're a playwright, you're a radio host, you're a spoken word artist. This is just part of Al Lutzen's general artistic expression, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't settle. I love doing a bunch of different stuff. So, yeah.
And do you play John in the show?
I do not.
Do you play yourself?
I don't play anything in this play.
You're not in the play.
I am not in the play. One thing I've learned is that while I do a lot of different things, sometimes I'm too busy to do everything. So, yeah, I'm not in this play, but there are some amazing actors. Frequent collaborators, Larry Knight and David Gerard. You know, me and those guys have done so many shows together, and they're great. And then a bunch of other talented people, Steve Anderson, another guy that I work a lot with, Eugene Lindsay. They're all pretty amazing.
And our own Michelle Simcolette, an employee here at WJCT, directed this show. That's exciting, too.
Yes, it's been great to have her. She's got so much energy, and she's just the funniest person I think I know, actually.
I had to, like, seduce her with chocolate to direct it.
Really?
Drop chocolate off at her office every day, like, hey, Michelle. Yeah.
So people need to come out. The grand opening is tomorrow night at Mosh.
Yes.
Can people still get tickets?
Absolutely. So until 7 o'clock tonight, you can get $15 tickets. And tomorrow, it starts the $20 tickets, and you can also buy $20 tickets at the door. The show dates are 17th, 18th, the 24th, and the 25th. Only four shows. And all shows are 8 p.m. at Mosh.
All right. So that is John Coffey Refuses to Save the World by our own Renaissance man, Al Lutzen. This is tomorrow night. Come on out and see the show in the Planetarium. Pretty exciting. Lee Hamby with the Five and Dime. Al, thank you both. Will you stick around for Carrie's segment?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. From The Who to Bob Dylan, Guns and Hoses and more. Lots to do across the First Coast this weekend. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the queen of our green room, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Spector here today.
Yay! I didn't know I was queen of the green room.
Pretty much. Yeah, I'd say so.
Awesome.
I'd say so.
I thought I was just the queen of selfies.
Well, that too. You're just the queen of Jacksonville. Let's just say that.
I don't know, but I've got a lot of skeletons in my closet. I don't want that kind
Don't we all, honey? Now, let's talk
about... Mine aren't that interesting. That's the problem.
All right, so what's going on this weekend? We just talked about Al's play. That looks amazing.
Which I'm so excited, and it's so great to see Al. I haven't seen him in forever, and I wish you all could have seen him jamming in here with the music.
I know, I was totally getting down.
He was getting down.
Hey, before you go forward, can you just say to the listeners how Melissa's shirt matches her lipstick? It's amazing. I've never seen that
before. I think you just said it. I need to say it.
It's so fly. Like,
well, mine usually matches my hair.
That's a big compliment coming from you.
It's fly. I love it.
I'm excited. Thank you.
Is she on fleek?
She is on fleek, whatever that means.
I don't even know if I used it properly.
I'm going to take that compliment with me for the next week. All right,
we're on
that's
fleek,
exciting.
Girl.
All right, so
fleek.
What's going on tonight?
Robert Irvine, who you may know from Dinner Impossible on Food Network, will be doing a multi-sensory theatrical experience. Not quite sure what that means, but there's audience participation. It's at the Florida Theater at 8 p.m.
And that's tonight. Very nice.
That is tonight,
The
yes.
Florida Theater's booking a lot of great stuff.
I know.
Yeah, they really are. So kudos. Now, Saturday, it's the fourth annual Strides for Pride.
Yes, ma'am.
At Riverside Park.
Riverside Park, not to be confused with Memorial Park. Let's just make sure we get that out there. It is the fourth annual, as you said. It's a run walk. They have a 5K and then also 1 mile. It starts at 7 a.m. I'm sorry, 8 a.m. And it is a community building event for the LGBT and ally community.
You have to wonder if our mayoral candidates are going to be at this event. That's your answer. Okay, moving on.
I'm not going to say anything.
Stomp Saturday night at the TU Center. Stomp is coming to town.
Is an explosive, inventive, provocative, witty, and utterly unique, unforgettable experience for audience. It's a lot of. They bang trash cans and brooms. It sounds really kind of weird.
You guys have seen
really
Stomp,
right?
I love it. Yeah.
Yes. It you know, banging brooms and lots of percussion. Very cool.
Yeah. If you have a kid who loves to bang on pots and pans, take them to see this. They'll love it.
But then they're going to go like, oh, I never thought about the trash can lid. And then,
yeah. Don't encourage them, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's Saturday night. Also Saturday night, this event has gotten bigger every year. It's Guns and Hoses at the Arena, the annual boxing match between the police and the firefighters.
And I have to say, last year, I think, pardon the pun, but I think JSO got robbed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was... rolling his eyes. Well, no, I was a judge last year.
You judge everything. Why am I not surprised?
It was super cool.
If there's an event that needs a judge, you will see Carrie Speckman
there. Here I am.
And she's easy to bribe.
But it was like 7-7, so this was the tiebreaker. And I really think that JSO got robbed. That's just me saying. What do I know?
Too bad for them. Well, maybe they'll get their revenge this year.
It's at Veterans Memorial Arena, 6 o'clock. It's a really fun, rowdy event.
Okay. Also Saturday, it's Mad Cowford Comedy for Critters. This is a benefit for Friends of Jacksonville Animals.
Yes.
At the Hotel Indigo.
Yes.
Nice venue.
It's interesting. It's at 7 p.m. They also have a silent auction.
Okay, now let's talk for a minute about this Grease sing-along at the Sunray Cinema.
Yes.
Because that sounds like... all kinds of perfect.
Because you know, there's so many. It's such a great soundtrack, and people like myself want to kind of sing along, whether you want to, or people next to you want to or not. You kind of can't help yourself. So this is an encouragement to come out and sing, and it supports Rockstart, Rallying for Oral Cancer Support through art.
Very nice. Now
which
I have
an
to
awesome organization. 9:30.
That's 9:30
at Sunray.
9:30 Saturday night. Also this week it's Celtic Woman. I have to drop
Let
this.
Me guess. You have an interview with a Celtic woman.
I do, because you know their mainstays on PBS TV. And I spoke with one of the members, Lynn Hillary, about how PBS has made Celtic Woman a phenomenon. Take a listen.
I think PBS has been just... I don't think Celtic Woman would be what it is now if it wasn't for PBS. It's been just vital, really. Because obviously to bring a show like this to the United States, which is such a big country, would be very difficult without something to help it along, to kind of just bring it to the people. Because, we were just a relatively small show that didn't have big high hopes, I don't think, when it started off. And then to get this partnership with PBS just kind of slowly brought it into the homes of people and... just brought a bit of the arts into people's homes. And it's fantastic. Like, at home, we have a thing called Sky Arts, which is just taken on Celtic Woman as well. And that's now people kind of know about us at home, whereas before that, people didn't really know about it. And even though I do sometimes feel like it's a shame that we have to rely on media, unfortunately, it's just the way it is, isn't it, these days. And so we have to be very grateful for that. And media brings a lot of good things around to people as well. So there's a lot to choose from. And we were really glad that people kind of took to Celtic Woman the way that they did.
So that's Celtic Woman. I think it's Friday night at the TU Center.
I believe you're correct on that.
Okay. Now, speaking of music, Bob Dylan and The Who, both in our area
at
the same time.
Well, a day apart.
One day apart.
And not together, obviously, because it's a day apart. But Bob Dylan and his band which is a really good name.
Yep.
Since it's his band. He will be at the St. Augustine Amphitheater at 8 p.m. And I believe 8 p.m. Yes. So what we, I mean, it's Bob Dylan.
What more can you say? And then Sunday, it's The Who along with, I love this, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
I have seen her and probably, I won't say the year because it will reveal my true age.
The fact that you're talking about Joan Jett reveals your age.
That hurts, Al Letson.
It's okay.
That hurts. You know, listen, she was great.
The Who is celebrating
her songs.
Can you guys believe this? The Who is celebrating 50 years of rocking.
Didn't they have like a finale tour or whatever? Like,
oh, they've had a million go away tours.
They're like, yeah, we got mortgages.
They'll tour till they're dead. Yeah. Joan Jett, a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. So
I know.
Very exciting.
Awesome. 7 p.m. Sunday.
I hate myself for
loving you. Can't break through for the things that you do.
You do everything with vigor, don't you?
Yes, she does.
I even sleep with vigor. I talk in my sleep so much. I know that's shocking.
Follow Carrie on Twitter.
That's at the arena, by the way.
At the Spectator. Go see Al's show and Lee's show at the Mosh. Guys, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
You have a great weekend out there. Fun. And that's our show. Next on Diane Rehm, Congress reaches agreement on oversight of the Iran nuclear deal and a Medicare doc fix and more. 100 days into the new Republican-led Congress, Diane looks at what's been accomplished and what's to come. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you've been listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great Thursday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.